The tracks of Saffron's mule headed straight back along the main route towards the Abyssinia border. Except where they had been overridden by other travellers, they were easy to follow. Saffron had made no attempt to cover them or to throw off any pursuit. Soon Ryder knew that he was overhauling her, but it was the middle of the afternoon before he made out her mule in the distance. He urged his own mount into a gallop. As he came within hail, he let out an angry shout. She stopped and turned back towards him. Then he saw that it was not her at all, but one of the camp servants, a dim-witted lad whose sole employment was chopping firewood for the camp. Anything more demanding was beyond his limited capabilities. "What in the name of God are you up to, Solomon? Where do you think you're going on Filfil's mule?" "Filfil gave me a Maria Teresa to ride back to Imtoto to fetch a box she had forgotten," he announced importantly, proud of the task with which he had been entrusted. "Where is Filfil now?" "Why, Effendi, I know not." Solomon picked his nose with embarrassment at the complexity of the question. "Is she not still in Djibouti?" When Ryder came in sight of the harbour again, the Singapore's anchorage was empty, and the smoke from her funnels was merely a dark smear on the watery horizon. Ryder stormed into his camp and shouted at Bakshit, "Where is Filfil?" Bakshit remained silent, but rolled his eyes in the direction of her tent. Ryder strode to the tent and stooped through the opening of the fly. "There you are, you scamp!" Saffron was sitting cross-legged on her camp bed. She was barefooted, and her most extravagant hat was perched on her head. She was looking extremely pleased with herself. "What have you got to say for yourself?" he demanded. "All I have to say is that you are my dog and I am your flea. You can scratch and scratch as much as you will, but you will not get rid of me, Ryder Courtney." They were halfway back to Imtoto before he had recovered from the shock and had come to realize how happy he was that she had not sailed with the Singapore. "I still do not know what we should do now," he said. "I shall probably be arrested for child abduction. I have no idea of the legal age for marriage in Abyssinia." "It's 14," said Saffron. "I asked the Empress before we left in Toto. Anyway, that is a mere guideline. Nobody pays much attention to it." "She was 13 when the Emperor married her." "Have you any other gems of information?" he asked tartly. "I have. The Empress has expressed her willingness to sponsor our union, should you care to marry me. What do you think of that?" "I had not thought about it at all," he exclaimed. "But, by God, now that you raise the subject, it is not the worst notion I have ever heard of." He reached across, lifted her off the back of her mule, seated her on the pommel of his own saddle, and kissed her. She clamped her hat onto her head with one hand and flung her other arm around his neck. Then she kissed him back with a great deal more vigour than finesse. After a while she broke away to breathe. "Oh, you wonderful man!" she gasped. "You cannot imagine how long I have wanted to do that. It feels even nicer than I hoped it might. Let's do it again."
"An excellent idea," he agreed.
The Empress was as good as her word. She sat in the front pew of the Imtoto Cathedral with the Emperor at her side, beaming on the ceremony like the rising sun. She was dressed in a Saffron Benbrook creation, which made her look rather like a large sugar-iced chocolate cake. Lady Packer had prevailed on her husband, Sir Harold White Packer, Knight Commander of Michael and George, Her Britannic Majesty's ambassador, to give Saffron away. He was in full fig, including his bicorn hat with gold lace and white cockerel feathers. The groom was handsome and nervous in his black frock coat, with the dazzling star of the Order of Solomon and Judea on his breast. The Bishop of Abyssinia performed the service. Saffron had designed her own wedding dress. When she came down the aisle on Sir Harold's arm, Ryder was mildly relieved to see that it was in pure virginal white. Saffron's taste usually ran to brighter hues. When they left the church as man and wife, a troop of the Royal Abyssinian Artillery fired a 9-gun salute. In the fever of the moment, one of the ancient cannon had been double-charged, and it burst in spectacular fashion on the first discharge. Fortunately, nobody was injured, and the bishop declared it a propitious omen. The Emperor provided vast quantities of fiery tedge to the populace, and toasts were drunk to bride and groom for as long as the liquor held out, and their well-wishers remained upright and conscious.
For the honeymoon, Ryder took his bride into the southern Abyssinian highlands on an expedition to capture the rare mountain Nyala. They returned some months later, without having caught even a glimpse of the elusive beast. Saffron painted a picture to commemorate the expedition. On a mountain peak in the background stood a creature that bore more than a passing resemblance to a unicorn, and in the foreground a man and woman whose identities were in no doubt. The woman wore a huge yellow hat, decorated with seashells and roses. They were not looking at the unicorn, but clasped between them was a large and magnificent bird, half ostrich and half peacock. The legend beneath the painting read, "We went to find the elusive Nyala, but found instead the elusive Bird of Happiness." Ryder was so enchanted by it that he had the picture mounted in an ivory frame and hung it on the wall above their bed.